Tristan Mitsock is a successful corporate lawyer on the cusp of partnership at one of Sydney's most prestigious firms. But just as the partners raise their schnapps to vote in favour of her elevation to partnership, the lights go out. Five environmental activists, Andromeda, Skydark, Flame, Ariel and Bearheart, have blown up two of the state's biggest power stations, plunging the metropolis into darkness. Andromeda is her boss at the law firm's daughter, and Cressida must act as her lawyer or shelve her partnership aspirations. Andy's father doesn't much care whether his daughter gets acquitted or not. Above all, Cressida is directed to keep the case quiet and make sure none of it makes the headlines or damages the firm's reputation. Our reading opens on Cressida's first meeting with Andromeda, or Andromeda Number Proximus Rigel Fairbank, as she is known, in the maximum security section of the Metropolitan Remand and Reception Centre at Silverwater, Mullawa, in solitary, to take first instructions from her client.
The entrance to Silverwater Women's Correctional Centre was marked by a high white sign with large efficient letters and a row of palm trees that tossed in the wind. At the end of the driveway, the prison's high brick walls sat, silent, breached by roller doors several stories high and circled by a cyclone fence. Cressida swung the Fiat into a marked bay near the guard station and killed the engine. The white file on the seat next to her was thin, containing only the blank Hannah Swartling intake form and the email from the prison yesterday. The copy of the court attendance notice had arrived from the police that morning. Oddly, only one charge was listed. Crimes Act 1900, New South Wales, Section 93 FA. Possession of explosives. A person who possesses an explosive in a public place is guilty of an offence. But then again, it was usual to start soft to secure a defendant while the police got the evidence they needed for the real case. Come on, how hard could it be? She asked herself. Regardless of the specifics, her job as Joanne's lawyer was the same in principle as acting for corporates, right? Get instructions, make the prosecution prove everything, and hope for a vaguely humane sentence. That was all anyone could ask of her, wasn't it? She jammed on a wide-brimmed hat and fell in behind the crowd converging on the footpath. Past the security office and up a slight rise, the large concrete building sat. Silverwater Women's Correctional Centre, oversized silver letters on the front wall declared. Correction, Cressida thought as she climbed the hill. Good luck with that. Maybe it was different in a women's prison, she decided, looking at the enormous wall. Weren't women likely to be kinder to each other? But then again, she wouldn't know. All her criminal clients so far had been male and minimum security. At the foot of the building, people were already waiting, sprawled on the long benches or leaning against the wall smoking. The men stared at her as she clicked up the footpath. The women gave one glance, sniffed, and looked away. She perched on one end of the bench as a rivulet of sweat broke loose from her armpit and ran down her ribs. Dispensing with a jacket wasn't an option, with so many pairs of mirrored sunglasses looking on. Discreetly, she found a tissue in her bag and wiped perspiration from under her eyelids, declaring inwardly to the sunglasses, "It's hot all right. It's not because I'm nervous." "Even though you are," she countered. "So?" There was plenty to be nervous about, wasn't there? What if the client was, well, violent or something? She'd carried 45 kilos of explosives 2 kilometres, for God's sake. And you had to be pretty intense to go blowing things up. Time check. 12:31. How typical of a government institution to be late. Asham School, she thought. She still couldn't believe Joanne Fairbank was an Asham girl. The remand centre at Silverwater would be a long way from the pearls and princess curls life her client had probably had. What a fall from grace. She'd known a couple of Asham girls who'd gone the radical route in their 20s, horizontally recruited to the Socialist Alliance at uni or run off with the Ferals like her brother and Sea Shepherd, and they all still end up living in the North Shore and married to some titan of grass seed or the manufacturer of pen lids. Joanne was probably feeling that she'd bitten off way more than she could chew right now, Cressida reflected. But then, she thought, looking at the hard faces of the women waiting, maybe a private girls' school was just the thing to sort you out for women's maximum security. The glass doors opened, and with careful nonchalance, cigarettes were stubbed out, mobile phones pocketed, and bodies pushed away from walls. Cressida shoved the hat in her bag and dispensed with any pretense of sang-froid. Once inside the glacial foyer, she weaved to the front of the queue. At last she was processed and sat down on one of the long red foam couches to wait, while across from her, a man in his 20s took up the staring. To distract herself, she focused on a sign taped below the window on the guard's office. Pajamas must be patterned. No lace or plain colours. Next to a picture of short flannelette pajamas, black covered with white stars. Buttons must be as shown on this picture. Full length microfiber dressing gowns only. A fluffy pink garment was demonstrated. Slippers must have no back or lining. To be provided on receipt of valid prisoner request form only. Cressida looked around discreetly at what people were carrying. Were there any pajamas in those bags? What would happen if their characteristics were in breach of protocol? Would the inmate be required to parade their lacy, plain-coloured nightwear with its inappropriate buttons and account for herself? What would the punishment be? Pajama confiscation? But then what would the inmate wear? It was all too complicated to contemplate. Fortunately, at that point, the guard came out of her cubicle and stood in front of the entrance to security, a small anteroom one side of the foyer that looked like a clear glass double-doored lift. In a rattle of plastic and keys, she held a card on an elastic band to a sensor, and it glowed green.
Legal first. You're the one here to see Fairbank.
Cressida nodded. The guard took a lanyard from around her own neck and gave it to her. There was a large plastic circle hanging off it.
Put this on.
She picked up a walkie-talkie and murmured into it.
One for Special K.
Special K? What was that? On the other side of the glass box, another guard in pale green descended the stairs, and the first guard nodded towards her.
She'll take you. Press the button.
Inside, people in white jumpsuits sat at tables, looking most of all to Cressida like a company of astronauts waiting for liftoff. Except for their faces, she thought, all of which were watching the door with a naked longing they were trying desperately to conceal. Then they were out on an asphalt open area where groups of women in bottle green tracksuits sat smoking. Her heels crunching on the stones was way too loud. Feeling their eyes on her, she focused on the torch swinging from the guard's belt in front of her. A couple of the women called out.
Hey, honey. Give him my love.
Nice suit. Nice swap, yeah?
Cressida nailed a half smile to her face. Torn between wanting to ignore them, but afraid it would incite aggression and smiling at the risk of generating ridicule. By the time she decided which approach to take, she'd reached the other side of the asphalt and stood, sweat prickling her armpits, as the guard opened another glass door and stood aside to let her through. They entered a bleak corridor. Silent as they walked, except for the clip of Cressida's heels and the squeak of the guard's shoes on the linoleum. It was lined with doors with small windows in them, through which Cressida glimpsed the metal frames of hospital beds and, in one, alarmingly, a leather strap on a chain hanging off one side of it. The whole place smelt of bleach and mildew.
What's this?
Infirmary.
What? Is she sick?
The guard only glanced back at her, impassive. They emerged into the sunlight again, onto a grassy area that was empty except for a small building on the other side. It was featureless weatherboard except for a letter K on the wall. The guard turned to her.
You ever visited Category 5 before?
No, but I know the rule.
Do not touch her. Do not give her anything. Do not accept anything from her. Do not discuss anything other than issues pertaining to your legal representation of her.
What, not even the weather?
Your visit is limited to 15 minutes. If you feel in danger at any time, press that button.
The guard indicated the item on the lanyard around Cressida's neck.
Oh, for God's sake. It's a panic button?
I will be within arm's reach outside the door. We don't want your family suing us in the event of your death.
Cressida stood for a moment, watching after her. How was she supposed to get proper instructions in 15 minutes? Screw that. She'd talk as long as she needed to. They could drag her out. She squared her shoulders and followed. The corridor was short, with a closed metal door on the left, and then, a short distance away, another. As Cressida followed, her heart was racing again. Ah, for God's sake, she thought, this is all hype. There's nothing to be afraid of. The guard stopped outside the second door. With a thud of D-bolts, she unlocked it and pulled it ajar, nodded at Cressida, and stood back on the other side of the passage. Cressida looked at her, waiting for her to leave.
If I've only got 15 minutes, at least give us some privacy.
As the guard stayed put, Cressida sighed and turned back to the door. She put her hand on the outer casing. The door itself was 5 inches thick. Come on, she told herself, you know how to do this. She took a deep breath and knocked with conscious firmness. The sound it made was barely audible. She tried again and hurt her knuckles. She gave up and spoke through the gap.
Hello, Miss Fairbank? It's Cressida Mitzok from Hannes Swartling. We have an appointment. The law firm?
On the table, an arm was visible. It wore a thin string bracelet, and there was a spiral tattoo on the wrist. She slapped on the door, feeling ridiculous, but it still made only a muted clap. She opened it enough to enter and looked in. The occupant had her head on one forearm, asleep on the desk. She wore an orange jumpsuit that still had the box creases on it, and dangling from the back of the collar was a tiny silver set of keys. The other arm was in a heavy cast, supported by a sling. Cressida's gaze strayed to her ankles. Around them were inch-thick chains, the links of another snaking to her wrists on the table, one running up to the white of the cast. Cressida paused, a sluice of fear hitting the back of her throat. Why would they put those on her if she wasn't dangerous? The first noticeable thing was that she looked like Brian. It was that same delicate aristocratic nose, the fine bow-shaped mouth, cheekbones that looked a little bit Native American. Her face was even more childlike than in the photo on the paper, but as well as the pink, there were dark lines angling down from the inner corners of her eyes and a dressing plastered to the side of her sweat-damp forehead. Under the short, messy dreadlocks, her blonde hair was dyed pink in some places and hacked close to her scalp in others. Round her neck, under the jumpsuit, were several woven necklaces. Against the white walls, the hard laminex of the desk, and the medieval whiff of the chains, the whole effect was of some sort of soft wild creature chastened by captivity, a piece of mangy, almost roadkill, brought into hospital for rehab but tranquilized to stop her biting someone. Cressida stood wondering what to do. She'd never had a sleeping client before. Eventually she sat down in the chair on the opposite side of the desk. The room was stuffy and so small their knees were nearly touching. She swallowed, concerned that even that small noise would be enough to wake the occupant up. There wasn't much point spending 15 minutes with her asleep, though, was there? Come on, get a grip of yourself. Shackles, panic button, guard outside. What more do you want? She cleared her throat. Nothing happened. And in the silence, she listened to Joanne's breathing. But the longer she sat there, the more awkward it felt. In. Out. In. Out. Then a door slammed outside, and the inmate sat up with a jerk, saw Cressida, and yelled, knocking the chair over. The guard burst in just as Joanne threw herself back from the desk in a crash of the chain on Laminex, hands raised.
It's fine. It's fine. Joanne, take it easy. Cressida Mitzok from Hannes Swartling.
Christ. Give me a heart attack. I must have fell asleep. They were full on grilling me till 4 this morning. Oh my God, it is so hot in here. Sorry, who are you again? I've been talking to so many people.
Cressida Mitzok.
She slipped an embossed business card from its case and held it out to her. She was annoyed to notice her hand was shaking.
Your dad sent me. Ryan.
My dad sent you? Oh, wow. How did that asshole know I was here?
You're kidding me. Well, you're all over the papers, for starters. You'd have to be on Planet Zorg not to hear about it. What happened to your arm?
Oh, I slipped on the way out the cooling pipe. I bashed it on the side and in the force of the water.
Did they set it properly and things?
Oh, I had that done before I turned myself in. A maid of mine.
Ah, oh, okay.
Some accessory after the fact. Let's not even go there, thought Cressida. Not yet.
So when do I get to get out of this dog box anyway?
She looked at Cressida, head cocked, and made a sort of musical noise, then shook her head like a dog shaking off water. Her dreadlocks danced.
If I'm going to be in here for a while, I want to make some friends. The walls in my cell have padding. It's like they think I'm nuts or something. I think I annoyed them, though. I kept saying the same thing, admitting to everything, basically. I think they expected more of a fight.
You told them everything?
Yeah. Why wouldn't I? I had nothing to hide. I meant to do it, remember?
Oh, well, anyway, once we get the brief of evidence, though, we can start tearing it to shreds.
Oh, that won't be necessary. I'm pleading guilty.
Guilty?
Yeah, of course. Why bother making the police prove it? I did it on purpose. I wanted to do it. Sorry, I thought Dad would have told you that. He doesn't know very much about me, but I would have thought he'd work that out.
But don't you want to wait and see what all the charges are before you decide?
Not really. I already know what they'll be. The gist of them, anyway. Blowing shit up. I didn't kill anyone at the plant, though. They do know that, don't they?
I don't know. Although, I do remember reading that there had been no deaths at Liddell.
Right. Good.
Cressida laid the newspaper article on the table. Her client saw it and grabbed it.
What the fuck? Terrorism? That's fucking absurd. Oh my god. Now I've seen everything. Don't let a good story get in the way of truth, right? Bloody hell. You know, it's this type of reporting that's got us in this fucking shitstorm. If newspapers had bothered to tell the truth about climate change, instead of being bought off by every stinking coal corporate in the country, the world would have taken action long ago. God, that's pathetic. Jesus. God, it's so hot. Can you ask them to get some fucking air conditioning on in here?
But Joanne, like it says, it's very likely they will charge you with terrorism if they haven't already. Surely you knew that.
No, that's ridiculous. I blew shit up. How is that terrorism?
Joanne, when they were interviewing you, did they go on about intention at all, the police?
What, you mean about why I did it?
Yes.
Sure, I told them to stop climate change, of course. Contribute to stopping it anyway. I imagine there'll be copycats around the world, if there haven't been already. Have there?
I don't mean that. Look, I think we can all accept that you did it to advance a political or ideological cause, right? But what...
What? No, that's not true at all. I did it to advance what was right. To call it political, that makes it sound like it was a choice.
No, it doesn't. Anyway, even if it wasn't political, it was ideological.
Wrong again. You make us sound like some kind of extremist. We were just doing what was necessary.
Joanne, that's fucking crazy. But look, I don't need to debate that with you.
I do. How on earth can you be my lawyer if you don't even believe in what we did?
It's beside the point what I think of what you did. In fact, it's better if I don't believe in it, as you put it, because most people wouldn't agree with it even if you gave them $1 million. And it's most people that's going to be on the jury. But anyway, we can wait to sort all that out once we've got a formal idea of all the charges. It's weird, but the police have only got you up on one charge so far, possessing explosives, Section 93 FA.
I thought there were a bunch of them. Or maybe that's just what they said they were going to do.
The police mentioned further charges?
Sabotage and shit, I think.
Well, this one's just possession of explosives at the moment. I think we can expect more. This charge, possession of explosives without lawful excuse, presumably you didn't have one?
Yeah, protection of Mother Earth.
Yes, but under some, you know, recognised law of Australia.
No.
Okay, so if you admitted in the interview that you were at Liddell and had explosives, well...
You're cooked, she thought. Unless they could challenge it on the public space bit. Wasn't Liddell private property? Maybe that was the angle.
I didn't admit to the explosives. I thought it was obvious. But yes, I did admit to being there. So I guess with that and their little 1D thing, voila, Section 93 FA. So what did my dad say?
Not much, but he's very concerned about you.
Has there been any coverage of the others? In the paper, I mean. Flame? Sky Dark?
This is where I should stop listening, Cressida thought.
What others? As far as I knew, there was only you.
Well, anyway, if you see anything, can you let me know? I haven't seen any of them since Friday night, we all went straight into hiding.
Can I ask just one question? Why that Friday night?
I don't know. It just turned out that way. Why?
Oh, nothing. The lights just happened to go off in the most important meeting of my career, that's all.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I know. A lot of people were inconvenienced. That was never our intention. Except that it was. Because the convenience of coal-fired power is exactly what's killing us.
I'll call you when those other charges come through.